And welcome back. This is Daily Buddhism Audio Show number 42. My name is Brian Schell, and I'm your host for the show. You can find the text as well as all links mentioned in this program and all past episodes on the website at www.dailybuddhism.com. Now, this upcoming week marks the first anniversary for the show, and I think over the next few weeks, we'll be revisiting some of the basics. Over the past year, I've revised my way of thinking on a few topics and better learned to explain others, while gaining many, many new listeners and readers who weren't around a year ago. Since the show is aimed towards new Buddhists and others curious about Buddhism, I don't think we can cover the basics too much. So February will be the Back to Basics month here on the Daily Buddhism. Now, don't hesitate to email or phone in your questions as always, but the lesson portions of the show will be on some of the earliest material. And on that note, it's been a while since I've done a full introduction to the Daily Buddhism and everything available through the site, so here goes. The Daily Buddhism is an email newsletter and website dedicated to explaining the basics of Buddhism to people who have been raised in a traditional Western setting, influenced primarily by Christianity. They've not been raised with Buddhism. We avoid all the Buddhist jargon and as many foreign words as possible. There's just no need to learn all that terminology to understand what Buddhism has to offer and how to practice it. I tend to emphasize the practical, real-world benefits of meditation and the Buddhist lifestyle, as well as the ethics and philosophy of Buddhism. I personally follow the Zen approach to Buddhism, although I have no problem discussing the more religious approaches to Buddhism whenever the topic comes up. The Daily Buddhism is set up to send out 5 main newsletter emails each week, 1 topic per weekday, and they can be about anything. Lessons, questions and answers, reviews, koans, and the occasional guest post. Every Saturday, I do an audio show, or as some people call it, a podcast. This is usually me reading the daily emails aloud, and maybe adding a little commentary after the fact, along with any announcements that have come up during the week. On Sunday, I release the weekly Buddhism PDF magazine, a printable version of what has gone before in that week, with full-color pictures suitable for printing out. And it also usually has some additional material related to the week's previous material. This week, for example, it'll contain the full text of The 37 Practice of the Bodhisattva, which is something that's mentioned in one of the earlier daily articles that we'll get to. The weekly PDF magazine is a low-cost, paid subscription at $1.25 or less per issue, but it's the only thing offered that you don't get for free. Everything else, the newsletter, the website, blog, audio show, are completely free. And I also run a few other websites which may or may not interest you. Check out the list of links on the dailybuddhism.com website. My favorite part of the show is where I can answer your questions on Buddhism and related topics. Anything goes, from deathly serious to silly stuff. You choose the topic. You can email me at brian@dailybuddhism.com or phone in and leave a voicemail message at 937-660-4949. Any time of the day or night. Remember, I answer all questions. If it's something personal and private, then say so, and it'll be just between us. Otherwise, I'll try to use it on the show. All your personal information is private and confidential, however. If I don't answer your email within maybe 24 hours, then be patient. I'm probably waiting to use it in the newsletter. If it's something urgent, I'll email you back right away. There's also space underneath every single posting on the website for you to enter your own ideas and comments. More and more people are taking advantage of this in recent weeks, and sometimes the comments are better than the original posts. So do definitely take advantage of that. And I mentioned before that we have the occasional guest post. If you have some story, experience, or lesson that you'd like to write up and share with everyone, then send me an email with the basics of your idea, and we'll see about you doing a guest post. You don't need to be a Buddhist master, you just need to have a good story with some kind of Buddhist point to it. It's easy. And one last thing. The show is supported primarily by your donations. You can find out more about that on the website, but there are many options available for any amount you want to send along. If you enjoy the show, or it's helped you in some way, then do please help back. I do put a lot of time and effort into all this. But now, let's get on to this week's show.
Hi, Brian. My name is Timothy. I love your show, and I thought I'd try to Skype you with a question. In Buddhism, you are supposed to avoid clinging, so what would be the better choice? Continue with the meditation practice, or do the work you need to do and do the meditation later? Is wanting to do the meditation practice now, rather than doing the work first, clinging to the practice? Thank you, and keep up the good work.
Well, you know, I'd rather meditate than work too. The real question is whether or not you want to eat and pay your bills. Simple, huh? No, of course not. Nothing is ever simple or cut and dried with these things. But which is more important or immediate? Earning an income? Or escaping the cycle of rebirth and finding nirvana? The trick is obviously to find a balance. The middle path, as always. In the East, at least in the past, one could give up worldly things and go live in the monastery or wander in the wilderness for a few years. For most of us in the West, and most of us in the East nowadays too, this is simply no longer an option. We have bills to pay, families to feed, and work that must be done. In most cases, it's the meditation that gets shoved off to the side or skipped when time gets short. In fact, the single most common complaint I hear is, I just don't have time to meditate. And I hear myself saying it sometimes too. And you know what? It's not true when I say it, and it's probably not true for you either. No, you shouldn't skip work to meditate, but I'll bet you could fill in a few minutes for meditation on a break or at lunchtime if you really wanted. There are even more ways to fit Buddhism and meditation into a busy schedule at home. Skip that episode of American Idol and meditate. TV is a choice, not a requirement. If you find yourself watching a lot of TV, you can save an hour a day by recording your shows and fast-forwarding through the commercials. Listen to podcasts, mine and others, in your car instead of music. The iPod has tripled the number of books I read every year by letting me hear audiobooks anywhere, and I used to read quite a lot before that. There are hundreds of books on time management, and it's not that hard to learn how to fit in something that you really care about if you really want to do it. Now, I think the real problem is that many of us see just sitting as the same thing as just goofing off. And this is not the case. Meditation is useful, healthy, and makes the rest of your life more mindful and more productive by helping to take out the mental garbage. Make time. You won't regret missing an hour of TV once you get into the routine. And then we had a very short koan this week called Ishun's Departure. When Ishun, the Zen nun, was past 60 and about to leave this world, she asked some monks to pile up wood in the yard. Seating herself firmly in the center of the funeral pyre, she had it set fire around the edges. "Oh, nun," shouted one monk, "is it hot in there?" "Such a matter would concern only a stupid person like yourself," answered Ishun. The flames arose, and she passed away. That's it, very short little story. But this really started a good bit of debate on the website in the comments section. Some people criticized Ishun for using harsh language, calling the other monk stupid. And of course, she did commit suicide, which is a bad thing. Other people saw it more as she was a very good nun because she had given up her need to be attached to her physical body. And that's really the point of these koans. There's no right or wrong. Different people see different things in the story. By thinking about these things from different viewpoints, you learn something. And that's what it's all about. ¶¶ And then on Wednesday, we had a CD review. This time we looked at Sitar Secrets by Al Gromer Khan. This one's published by New Earth Records. It has 9 tracks, runs for almost 48 minutes. And of course, in the show notes, there are links to buy it from Amazon or iTunes. This one is currently, as of right now, only available through MP3 download. The real CD will be available later on in February. A couple of weeks ago, I reviewed a CD by Chinmaya Dunster, which I said was a little bit wangy-twangy due to the style and the instruments he used, which included the sitar. This one is similar in many respects, but this CD is almost exclusively sitar music. So if you liked that one, you'll really like this one. According to the cover, Sitar Secrets is yet another mesmerizing album from ambient sound architect Al Gromer Khan. At once entrancing and meditative, yet seductive and passionate, the intense rhythms and sounds of Sitar Secrets will completely envelop and enthrall you. Excellent for chill out and progressive ambience, wonderful for yoga and meditation. A unique melding of traditional Indian and modern ambient music. There are 9 tracks on the CD, ranging between 2.5 minutes up to around 14 minutes long. The tracks, while all being very heavy with sitar and therefore similar, do not all sound alike. Some tracks are very distinctive and even have a slight tune to them. This would be yet another excellent addition to a meditation music library. If you like the sitar and are looking to add an ambient Indian mood to your meditations, this would be an excellent choice. And again, there are links for downloading the MP3 from Amazon and iTunes in the show notes. Next up, we had a couple of questions from readers. First question. Hello, I'm a teenager who was raised a Catholic and now looks towards Buddhism. My question is there a specific day to go to temple, much like the Christian Sunday masses? Also, can you please tell me what goes on at a temple? If I visit one, what goes on during a ceremony? Thank you for the podcast and the daily emails. They've helped me understand a lot. Okay, and my answer is broken into 2 parts. On the Buddhist Sabbath day. From my own experience, the temples are open for services on Sunday. Here in the West, that's probably due to tradition. The majority of people here are Christians and have always gone to church on Sunday, and that's probably spilled over into Buddhism as well. I noticed the same thing while I was in Japan. Most people went on Sunday morning. That's probably because that's when they have time off from work, and it's just easiest to do that. There is no particular Sabbath day in Buddhism. And the second part of the question is, what does a small Buddhist church or temple do? Now, I've been to some of the oldest temples in Japan, and things are quite different over there, but I assume you want to know about the local American or Western temples and churches that you could go to here. So I'll talk about the local Dayton, Ohio area Sangha. Here in Dayton, Ohio, the only temple is a very small Tibetan place. On Saturday, they offer beginning meditation classes, and on Sunday, they have regular services. They're closed the rest of the week unless they have something special going on. On Sunday morning, people arrive, and some do prostrations to the statues and pictures, while others just go and sit on a cushion somewhere. Then there's a short Dharma talk led by a member of the Sangha. There is no priest, monk, guru, or any kind of leader at this place. Although they regularly host guest teachers, they are mostly just a group of lay people that get together. After the Dharma talk, there is about 25 minutes of silent group meditation. Then they read from a little booklet called The 37 Practices of Bodhisattvas, and they read all 37 of them in unison. This takes around 10 minutes. Some people read from the little booklet, others have it memorized. After this, they do something called Green Tara, which is a form of chanting meditation. They recite in both English and Tibetan. After several pages of simply reading the text, they come to a point where the Tibetan is Amtare tu tare ture svaha, which they repeatedly chant for nearly 20 minutes. I've never counted, but I believe it's 108 repetitions, once for each bead on the set of mala beads. Then they pray for the Dalai Lama and the Rinpoche who originally set up the Sangha years ago. And then they're done and they all go home. And that's pretty much it. They vary the Dharma talk every week, depending on who's leading the discussion, but it's mostly something along those lines. And that's just a local group here, although I suspect Tibetan groups do something pretty similar everywhere. Obviously, I've been to this temple, but I personally don't embrace the Tibetan route. I prefer Zen, but that's not really an option around here, so I have to make do. And I asked for others to describe what goes on in their local sanghas in the comment section of the blog, and a few people did. But one of the questions on the previous post involved something I said about the members of the sangha bowing to statues and pictures. So here's the next question for the next day. I was reared in monotheistic traditions, and my question is basic. It concerns iconography and the reason why Buddhists pray to idols. Arguably, Buddha himself was suspicious of being venerated, and it would be nice to know how contemporary Buddhists rationalize the practice. It is intriguing to see the Tibetans to their prostrations, and in matter not unlike Orthodox Christians, whose influence on Islamic prayer worship has been remarked. Okay, so basically, why do Buddhists pray to idols is the question. And I'm not going to answer it. For the rest of this post, I'm going to quote from Pema Chodron, a very famous American Buddhist teacher. She says, "Not at all. A piece of clay or bronze or jade is not the object of our respect and worship. When we bow before Buddha images, we are recalling the qualities of the enlightened beings. It is their impartial love and compassion, generosity, morality, patience, joyous effort, concentration, and wisdom that we are showing respect to. The statue or painting serves to remind us of the qualities of the Buddha, and it is the qualities, not the clay, that we are bowing to. We need not have a statue in front of us in order to bow or respect the Buddhas and their qualities. For example, if we go to a place far away from our family, we think about them and feel much love, but we also like to have a photo of them with us to remember them better. When we look at the photo and feel love for our family, we are not loving the paper and ink of the photo. The photo merely strengthens our memory. It is similar with a statue or painting of the Buddha. By showing respect to the Buddhas and their qualities, we are inspired to develop these extraordinary qualities on our own mind streams. We become like the people we respect. When we take the love, kindness, and wisdom of the Buddhas as our example, we strive to become like them." And I thought that was a pretty good answer, but I put on the question, so what do you think? Does this seem like a reasonable explanation to you? Or do you think this is still justification for worshiping idols? And then the comment section on the blog kind of went wild with that one. Some people agreed with me and said that was a great answer. Others said I forgot to mention something about Pure Land Buddhism, where the people actually do worship Buddhas. Others said that Christians do it, so it's okay. Others say Christians do it, so it's bad. Some people simply felt that did not really address the real issue behind all of this. And basically, I would say this post has been one of the more controversial ones on the site. So if you'd like to see all the various viewpoints on this topic, just go to dailybuddhism.com, find this particular topic, and read all the comments down at the bottom. And that's all I have for you this week. Stop back in next week for more great Buddhist topics. And remember, the Daily Buddhism runs primarily from your donations. Check out www.dailybuddhism.com/donate and click on any of the options there to donate as little as $1 or any amount you'd like to put in. If you do make a donation of either $5 a month or a single donation of $50 or more, you'll get a free subscription to the weekly Buddhism PDF magazine. But of course, anything you send in is appreciated and helpful. Keep in mind that the Daily Buddhism Daily Newsletter is completely free. No spam, no catches, All you need to do is go to the website and sign up, and you'll get something in your mailbox from us every single day. If you have a question on any Buddhism-related topic, send in your questions by email to dailybuddhism@replaymedia.com or phone them in to the voicemail line at 937-660-4949. Or post your ideas or comments or thoughts in the comment section of any individual blog post. And I'll see you next week.